In case you haven't noticed, there's been some criticism of pro wrestling media lately. Accused of everything from favoritism to clickbaiting to a lack of coverage to sensationalism in headlines to outright lying, those who write about the wrestling industry are daily targets from some section of wrestling fandom. But that criticism, it's not without merit. There are some problems with wrestling media. They're shared throughout other media beats as well. Those stem from a lack of formal training, a lack of media literacy with both the subject and those that consume articles, and also a lack of barrier to entry that results in every outlet being seen in the same light, even when the intent behind that outlet isn't on the up and up. So can all this be fixed, or are we just doomed to be in this endless loop forever? Well, to help figure this out, I talked to John Alba, an Emmy-winning sportscaster that has worked in traditional media, has hosted several wrestling podcasts, including The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, and has been a manager on the indie scene. I'm Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Well, I've been waiting to have this man back on the show for a very long time, and what better time than now? About some Big J wrestling journalism stuff, wrestling media stuff, what he's been up to, recent big angle he took part of in a limitless wrestling ring that I talked about in a different podcast, and all that good stuff, all types of things to talk about, with our good friend John Alba. John, welcome back.
What's up, man? Good to chat with you.
Yeah, it's I say it's been a while, but you and I just talked a few weeks ago regarding Prestigious, a trio in Limitless Wrestling, the faction that and a whole storyline that came to an end after about a year or so, and people can find that on the Limitless Wrestling feed. People might be listening to this and figuring, oh, why would I listen to this about an indie I've never watched before? But it is, you know, I was really thinking about afterwards, and I'm not just saying this, is that, and you said the same thing, you don't really get insight into indie storylines that much, I think just because the way that the indies are, it's costing people in, people out, and what have you, but you still have storylines, and the promotion main that you and I have done stuff with forever certainly has quite a bit of them, and this was one you were heavily involved in, and it was really cool, and I think people that are into storylines and how these things work would get a lot out of it. And that was a lot of fun to do. And again, something you don't hear a lot about in wrestling and kind of actually in wrestling in general, I think.
I think a lot of indie promotions don't put quality time into telling long form stories. And I understand it because that's not necessarily the nature of independent wrestling all the time. A lot of the times it's just let's have some great matches and showcase talent. And there's nothing wrong with that per se. But I think the organizations that do take the time and tell those long form stories are the ones that really build goodwill with their fan base. So I had a lot of fun taking a deep dive into the storytelling there. I've been very fortunate with that organization in particular to have a lot of creative freedom in telling great stories, not even just ones that I'm involved with, but others as well. I had a great time diving into it with you guys.
Yeah, it was awesome. So yeah, for people that are interested in just checking that out and maybe entice you to listen to watch some more Limitless Wrestling. Good stuff there. But yeah, one of the big things I wanted to talk to you about, John, and is this, you know, I was recording this on Tuesday afternoon. There was this this Malakai Black situation that once again kind of took a turn last night where he took to Instagram Live and basically kind of ripped on the quote unquote dirt sheets a bit and basically said, I never said this. I never said this and what have you. And this is not a, we said, he said situation or anything like that. But I've been seeing this kind of this narrative online, which is always kind of dangerous anyway, but about, you know, wrestling media sucks. It's so bad. It's so terrible. You never believe what you read from Meltzer or Sean or anything like that, you know, and all this stuff. And I've been thinking about this for, forever. I think it's just kind of part of what people like us do. But I was thinking back to this July conversation I heard that Tony Khan did an appearance on Busted Open Radio, which, no offense to them, not exactly a bastion of journalism. They don't really ask hard hitting questions, but I think that's kind of their mission statement, and I think they'd be proud to say that, and that's cool. Tony Khan does a weekly appearance on there generally when there's not big stories going on. And he was talking about, he got a conversation with Tommy Dreamer and Mickey James about, journalism, and it was in wrestling media and social media and so on. This clip that I sent you, I'm actually going to play that right now for people. It's about 8 minutes or so, but I think it's really kind of valuable for this conversation. So we'll play that now, and then we'll talk to John.
And I'm glad you're doing that, and you've been doing that, and it shows, because I think it's just good for pro wrestling. And I mentioned Vince McMahon, stepping away, and I think you mentioned it in a recent interview as well. AEW doesn't go head to head with the WWE. You're on different nights. You've been able to take the night that you're on and dominate. And I think pro wrestling fans now are intelligent enough, Tony. They know that there are other products out there, and they watch those other products. I think I'm a firm believer that everyone's success, I think, overall, long-term, is good for every promotion out there.
Yeah.
Totally agree. And I think right now in the wrestling business, it's been a good year for the sport. And really, when I was a kid in 1998, I think all pro wrestling was so hot, and really it was unfortunate what happened over the next couple of years after that. And if we could have kept it like it was in 98, where, imagine if it was 1998 forever, where all the companies were just red hot all over the world instead of everything just kind of moving in one direction. But there's a lot of changes in pro wrestling. I think it's going to be really positive for the fans overall. I am a little amused that changes in the competition, people think that it's just going to magically change the landscape. Like some of these accounts, Twitter can be a very fun place to follow, but some of the narratives I've seen every day for the last week are really amusing me. I've got people signed here for 5 years, and people think just because the guy, the CEO, the chairman, the head of creative, those positions change in the competition, people I have 5-year contracts with are just magically going to switch teams. Good luck with that. Adam Cole is signed into about 2027 now. So I wouldn't expect to see him going anywhere anytime soon. Malachi Black's got almost 5 years left on his deal. I wouldn't expect to see him going anywhere anytime soon. So just because these guys had some success under a previous administration somewhere else, they're not magically going to be going anywhere. Those are two people I really like just as examples of people that have worked under that previous administration now. And I'm very amused by that. And that's a narrative I see so-called wrestling writers pushing every day. It's pretty amusing.
Well, thank you for your honesty as always. And we just had Natty Neidhart on, and she's talking about how a lot of the women want to deactivate their Twitter because it's so toxic. And I know you get it too. And it's wrong. And that's why, I love this open forum we always have, but also why I always defend, your vision as well as professional wrestling, because people don't know the truth and then they want to write about it and fabricate, and everybody jumps on it. And it's wrong. I'm so happy for an Orange Cassidy, who everyone's like, if you don't get it, and I'm telling you, I was in the ring with him and I didn't get it. And the moment he turned around, I got him. And I'm telling you from my experience as a professional wrestler for all these years, and it's cool if you don't like him, if you don't like the gimmick, but if you understand it, it's great. And it's, again, your prerogative.
But you got it in the ring with him. And it's one of those things where I needed him to explain it to me. And then when he did, and I sat down and talked to him, I really connected with him, and he's become such a huge part of our shows. But I guess you figured out when he kicked you, he's not trying to actually kick you. Those kicks don't hurt. It's psychological. He's trying to psych you out. And I think that goes a long way. So you being in the ring with him, I think that was a light bulb moment for you.
Yeah. It's that simple, man. It really is.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, wrestling is probably the only industry where journalists, and I use that word loosely, will report on rumors as if they're facts, or opinions as if they're facts. Because there is no like fact checking or retraction statements when they've clearly said something completely wrong or any of those things. And it's a blessing because you're grateful that people are passionate enough about the sport and about your product and about the things to report on them. However, it's a double-edged sword when, you know, there is a difference in real journalism, and real journalists know that you don't, if it's an opinion, you put it as an opinion. If it's a fact, you can put it as a fact, but you don't ever report a rumor as a fact or an opinion as a fact. But wrestling, we do that. So
it's really interesting, Mickey. I think it's such a great point you bring up. And it's funny because I see both sides of it. And actually, so the NFL, people complain about sports media, but I think the NFL media overall does a really good job. And occasionally, like a rumor or something, you know, hypothetical, people bring up trade scenarios that could happen, but they rarely get reported as facts. And I think there's good, responsible journalists in sports media overall. It's interesting because in European football, now in England, I do see more and more rumors getting reported as facts, and they get people wound up. But there is definitely a lot more responsibility there than there is in the wrestling media, where there is really, as you said, Mickey, there are people with high journalism standards. But on the aggregate, if you want to get something printed in pro wrestling, you can find somebody to say just about anything for you in pro wrestling, you know. And you can convince somebody to report just about anything as a fact, even if it's ridiculous and untrue. So you're right, the standard for reporting is so low. And also a lot of these people are working with outlets that are fairly legitimate outlets with a lot of following. And they'll still just put up just about, as you know firsthand, I'm sure, just put up just about anything.
Right. Just for the likes or the hits. Or, and a lot of times the headline will read one thing, and then you click the article, and it's really completely opposite. It's not even like related almost. It can be frustrating at times. I know.
You're totally right. You're totally right. And I'm so glad you brought it up, but that's exactly what you said, Mickey. That's why I've seen a couple of these accounts that like work for big outlets, and it just amuses me. Cause it's like, again, like these are guys in some cases that have been here less than a year that did like 5-year contracts, and you know, they're just magically going to go away because they had a better time working for one guy than the guy after him.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. So I've seen a lot of that this week and gotten a lot of that, but it's also nothing new. You know what? It's funny though, because we're on such a great run, but I do feel like the way I see people talking about this summer, you know, it has been challenging. You know, you want to get all the top stars in, but we're having such a great summer and great results. Rampage just did the best demo we've done since April, and it's been up 2 straight weeks in the demo. And Dynamite's been the number one show on cable for 5 straight weeks on Wednesday. And we have all these great matches on tap tonight. I think tonight's one of the strongest lineups, and Fight for the Fallen is always a really big show for us. And I see also these magical narratives. Somebody may have seen this post, and it was from like an AEW fan. So I love the fans, but I'd go back and question some of these facts. Okay. Here's a post I saw. We're 4 weeks from All Out. Okay. Well, that's not true. Immediately. Like, okay, we're 6.5 weeks from All Out. So, okay. So I'm taking this a grain of salt with this person's comments right off the bat. We're 4 weeks from All Out. We don't know all the matches for All Out. We don't know the matches. They haven't gotten into the card. At this time last year, 4 weeks out, we knew everything. Okay, well, first of all, again, we're 6.5 weeks out. We're not 4 weeks out. And no, we did not know any of it at this time last year. And furthermore, the first dance was on August 20th. It was less than 2 weeks before the pay-per-view when CM Punk came in. The week before that was the Kenny Omega Christian match. That was August 13th that set up their match at the pay-per-view. The Lucha Brothers Jurassic Express match was on the 3rd episode of Rampage on August 27th, like 9 days before the pay-per-view. So like most of the biggest matches were getting set up in the final week because a lot of stuff was changing. Punk was coming in and we were getting set for the arrivals of Danielson and Cole. A lot of the stuff leading into All Out happened in the final week. And honestly, I don't know how people are remembering it so differently, but facts get distorted pretty quickly and disseminated pretty quickly. So it's amazing how quickly that stuff spreads. So this person got people convinced we're 4 weeks out from the pay-per-view and we're over 6 weeks out.
So my kind of, I guess we'll kind of start here, John. What is your overall view on the state of wrestling media in terms of just someone's supposed to ask you from the outside, and you have the benefit of doing this because you have many friends outside our wrestling bubble. They're asking you kind of like, what's wrestling media like? How would you describe it?
Well, I kind of have the benefit of having been outside of the wrestling media bubble, having been traditional sports media, traditional media, and then transitioning into wrestling media full time. And I think that wrestling media has been treated in a way over the years where it's not necessarily viewed in this prism of respect. There are some individuals who have earned that. I think one of the biggest issues was lack of transparency in pro wrestling in and of itself. It's ironic because pro wrestling is an industry that is built on a lie in theory. All objects in the mirror are not as close as they appear, right? But because of the lack of transparency that we've seen from wrestling companies in general, the responsibility of wrestling media and wrestling journalism and the job that wrestling media does is somewhat mediated. And we're seeing those times change a little bit, thankfully, I think for the better. We're seeing more wrestling organizations do press availability or press conferences. But I do think that there is a difficult standard that wrestling media does not know what to hold itself to. And there are some members of wrestling media that they want to report things, but then they also want to be buddy-buddy. Mm-hmm. It's a really weird line to walk. And I understand criticism and I understand support equally.
Yeah, it follows along a lot with how general media is going, in that it's like access journalism seems to be what is, it is what happens now. It is hard. You know, you've always had to try to make friends with sources and try to foster relationships that will lead to the facts that you need when you're trying to report on a story. That goes for any type of journalism. Now it's a question of, can you get access to the right people? Are they willing to talk to you? Do they need to talk to you? And do they want a truth to get out there? And most often, do they not want to be associated with that, and they just want to speak on background or just not speak at all or tell their truth to what they feel their truth is to the audience via social channels? I think we see this a lot with this surge in documentaries, athletes putting out their own documentaries, and they're going to tell their story versus an independent party telling a story to and then showing the warts and all. So I think, you know, I think that has something to do with it. There's a lot of things here though. So I kind of had jotted down, and this isn't a pat ourselves on the back wrestling media, here's what's wrong with everyone else. These are just some issues I think that are kind of within our business that I want to kind of bring up you and see what you think. The first is the perception of media. Not all media to me is built the same, and especially social media. In that clip I just played, you know, you hear Tony and Mickey James and Tommy Dreamer. I think it was really kind of Mickey and Tony kind of just floating in between, equating what they see on social media versus what's being reported and so on. You and I both know it is super easy to set up a website, create a Twitter account, create something, some name that's associated somewhat with wrestling, and you just start. However, you just start by basically repurposing what other people... You're aggregating to a level, but then also you see some say, okay, this isn't working, I'm getting no attention, and I'm going to start making things up, or I'm going to say, this source told me this, and sometimes it's based on often guesses, but, you know, we have no idea who's starting these websites and so on and so forth. And there are literally, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pro wrestling websites out there. There are even more social media accounts, some with really good following numbers of followers, that claim to be insiders, and they start shit up too. So I think the problem is that for every reputable journalist or website that's trying to do the good stuff on the upper level, so to speak, the wrestlers and those that like to complain view everyone in the same lens, and they're not as discerning as they should be. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're bringing up a point that is a much larger problem in society that goes beyond wrestling, and that's media literacy.
Yeah.
Where people don't necessarily have complete context to the information that they are consuming. They don't understand if a report is being aggregated. They don't understand if a report is being directly attributed to a specific source, where it's skewed on the bias spectrum. There's a lot of different elements that go into that. So I believe that it is up to the consumers of media to be just as responsible as the people reporting stuff in understanding where they are consuming said information and understanding what is credible versus what is not.
Yeah. And I think to that point, that's one thing that feel that makes me feel like, I don't say we're doomed, but we're kind of going to be stuck in this position forever. Is because
social media is such an echo chamber.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful.
And it is where someone, and look, I've had this. I had someone almost tank my career because they literally made a fake tweet in Photoshop and posted it to Reddit and attributing it to me. And it got picked up by some people in some companies who thought that it was real.
Yeah.
And that's just the reality of where we are right now in social media and in media consumption. And someone could go right now and say, Sean Ross Sapp reports, I don't even want to say something because it could be picked up, but Sean Ross Sapp reports blah, blah, blah. And Sean could have never said anything of the type, but people will run with it because they saw someone else say, oh, well, Sean said it and Sean's reputable. So that's how it happened. And I think that happens a lot in wrestling media in particular.
Yeah. Fans, I think, and this goes with social in general and you call media literacy in general, is fans often hear what they want to hear. When they want to believe a certain thing. So they find someone with any type of follower count or something kind of like what you were mentioning, like, oh, this backs up what I feel and I think. I'm gonna retweet this. That's how it builds.
Well, that's a larger thing too, Josh. And I don't mean to cut you off, but that's a larger thing. People will watch Fox News because they want one perspective. People will watch CNN because they want one perspective. Whatever it may be, they want a perspective that generally lines up with how they feel about something. And I think that happens a lot in wrestling media. And I don't want a blanket statement here. There are some really smart pro wrestlers who get it. Not to put my stuff over, but Matt Hardy is one of those guys who has a full understanding of the wrestling media landscape. There are other guys who are very much like him, who they read everything, they see things, and they understand what does aggregation look like versus what does someone who is credibly reporting something look like.
Right. And also looking, actually reading a story versus just a headline. And because sometimes you may see, you know, like we'll do if we're, you know, getting a report from somewhere else, we haven't corroborated, you know, report XXX. And you can just tell people just based on the headline, and it's not even like a clickbaity headline. I know people like to say that shit too, but you know, but sometimes they'll ask questions like, oh, what does this mean? And it's like, dude, this literally in paragraph 3 of the story I wrote. Can you just read it? They don't read it.
But then like I listened to the clip, and when Tony and Mickey were talking about how a headline says one thing and the body of an article says another, sometimes that there's validity to that. Yes. That does happen. That absolutely happens. I've seen some headlines from certain websites that are usually aggregator websites. And then I read the body of the article. I'm like, man, that is not what the headline should be at all. Mm-hmm. That's not what this story is saying. I mean, I've seen it happen with my own podcast. Stuff gets aggregated from my podcast and the headlines. I'm like, wait a minute. This is not what was said on our podcast at all. Right. And then I'll click the article and the article has a transcript of what was said. And I'm like, that does not match the title at all.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, even like Bill Simmons on his podcast, he's talking NBA stuff. He actually tells people like the aggregators don't use this. I'm opining this. I'm not actually saying this is fact. It's like, you have to be that blatant sometimes. It's crazy, but that's, you know, and it feeds this lower level websites who are trying to get attention and anything they can to kind of churn and get stuff out there. But unfortunately, the business and so many people in the business don't have that literacy and they see all this shit and that just fosters into it. Like, so when you have a reputable reporter or someone else come out, they paint everyone in the same light. which makes it even harder to get the facts out there because then they don't want to talk to anybody. It's just this really vicious cycle. I don't really know how to kind of get past that element, but that's, I want to kind of bring that up as a reality. So I would say wrestlers need more media training and media literacy, as you're talking about. But also, you know, websites have to, I don't know how to best, other than doing quality work, I don't know how to best alleviate that because it's, you know, the internet.
Again, it's responsibility from a lot of different parties. It doesn't just fall on one. And listen, wrestlers have reason to be skeptical. There were two decades or a decade and a half where online wrestling aggregation was really irresponsible. There's no doubt about that. But with that said, I do think we are in an era right now where there are more reputable people in wrestling media than there ever have been. So I do think that some of those bad habits will hopefully over time be done away with.
We'll turn a mirror on ourselves, not just you and I, but kind of the business, is virtually nobody has a degree in this or any type of real formal training. And I think
watch yourself.
Yeah.
For yourself, damn it.
I'm saying you and, but you and I,
I'm kidding.
You and I are like a few, only not to pat ourselves on the back to it, but I have a journalism degree. You have a degree as well. You've been this, you've done that. And you've made no bones about it. And it's, there's so many people that haven't just because the way the internet websites kind of build and staffs build and all that stuff. And I think it hurts in a lot of ways. One, I think in the writing aspect of it as well. I think if you haven't written a news story, it's kind of it makes it harder to write stories that are legible. You know what I mean? Which is obviously a big part of writing, but also asking the right questions, knowing the right things to put in a headline, not putting words in each other's mouth. Look, I make mistakes with this too. Luckily we have some good editors on staff that are also trained that have kind of helped even put me in check sometimes, remind me of certain things and vice versa. But there's so many that aren't trained. Like how do you, again, not viewing, subjects as friends, being fair, asking the right questions, you know, and there's so many, again, it just goes into the access journalism phase. You know, I see people that have these interviews with Tony Khan and with others, and you're kind of like in your back of your mind, like, I want to ask these five questions that kind of top of mind right now. And all of it, it's just promoting a show. It's like, let's talk about this match or this match. When it's like, God, you got the head of this company here. You have this or have this. You don't have to go at the person, but there's a certain way of asking questions the right way that you just get via more training and more just doing this. And it's a frustration. I don't know if it'll get better. How people dress at shows. You know, I was looking at, I think I was talking to you about this, the Clash at the Castle, quote unquote, press conference. And I see people in WWE gear and like t-shirts and it's like, I don't know. I just come from a different era where it's like you dress for the job you want and you dress in a way that shows the people that you're interviewing respect as well as you're taking this as seriously. You know, this isn't an indie show in the middle of nowhere, USA. This is, you know, WWE, and you're talking to a guy in Triple H, Paul Levesque, whatever you want to call him, that is dressed in a suit and looks good. Just to me, if you carry yourself in a certain way, you're going to earn some sort of level of respect. So that my kind of rant on all that.
Yeah, and you know how I dress for media events and stuff. But
of course, yeah.
And maybe it's a little excessive how I do. It's just kind of how I was in traditional sports media, so that's how I carry myself. But I also don't want to sit on a pedestal and talk down to colleagues or anything like that. Like, that certainly is not anything that I'm interested in doing. I do think that we can all try to lead by example and hold ourselves to a higher standard of professionalism, especially if we're to be taken seriously. But I also want to say this too. In traditional sports media, there is some highly unprofessional stuff that happens.
Yeah.
Highly unprofessional stuff. I was in a press conference with Team USA men's soccer, you know, one of the highest body organizations in the world. And a reporter was on FaceTime during a press conference. I couldn't believe my eyes. So I don't want to sit here and be like, this is just a wrestling media problem. This goes beyond that too.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up too. So during that interview, and Mickey James, who is, seems great. I've never interviewed her, talked to her, anything like that. But she, you know, when she says that, you know, wrestling media is the only industry where they report rumors as if they are facts, that's just simply not true. I mean, every single business in the world, every single business in the world has insiders. And they have, quote unquote, dirt sheets, people that know and talk about this. The film industry, I mean, the entertainment industry is littered with them. Littered. TMZ.
Yeah.
Case in point. I mean, the highest of the high, right? Or right. The lowest of the low, depending on what you think of some of their tactics and all that. But every business has this. They have insiders, people like, because people, they see what is the PR front. And then they're like, I want to get to the real story of this. Every business has this. And I mean, for her to say, and even Tony Khan saying, you know, in the NFL, really, you know, facts don't really get, or rumors don't really get reported as facts. It's like, my guy, that happens all the time. You look at ESPN's right-hand side, you know,
so,
it's crazy.
So I agree entirely with the point you're saying, and you're not wrong at all. I think what he means by that is that there, for a rumor to really pick up ground in a professional sport, like the NFL or Major League Baseball, whatever, there really has to be, you can tell when a report has some credible fire behind it versus when there's just chatter. And I do believe there is a degree of difference in the NFL per se, when there's something that there's chatter about versus, okay, this rumor is being picked up everywhere because there's clearly some sort of Venn diagram that is leading to this likely having some credence, versus in wrestling, where there absolutely are things that are just made up out of thin air that people run with. I do believe that happens more in pro wrestling. What you're saying is completely factual and true, but I do understand the point that I think he was trying to make. I just don't know if they were able to properly convey it in the way that he was suggesting there was a difference.
Got it.
My opinion, just my opinion.
No, I would agree with that. I would agree. I think that's fair.
I mean, there are, you go to websites, wrestling websites, I see pop up on Facebook all the time, and like the aggregation system where it's just like, or the algorithm, I should say, where it's just like zero news or whatever. And it's like this WWE superstar lost their leg in a fight with a bear. And people are like, oh my God, did you see that Ryback lost his leg in a fight with a bear? And wait a minute, Ryback doesn't even work for WWE. Wait a minute, Ryback still has two legs. That's not true. So I do understand the point where wrestling fans perhaps might be more willing to give credence to something without seeing if there is credibility to who is reporting that rumor and where that rumor is coming from in terms of a source.
So leading into that, I think one of the issues is access at shows. So you've attended AEW, both pay-per-views and regular TV tapings. I have attended TV tapings before, WWE shows, whatever. So when you go to a Dynamite, as I've been three times before in Boston, you know, going into it, all you get is access to the show. You get a seat. We don't even have a media table, which is a bummer because I like to actually work at shows. I don't like to just sit and watch. I like to actually kind of do stuff. It's kind of
or nice. Media parking. Come on, man.
I know, no, right? Yeah, no media parking. No press meal, John. They don't even feed us. You know, I'm used to the UFC and even other stuff too. Just where it's like, yeah, you have this and this and this, so it makes the job, you know, it makes the job easier, and you're actually kind of working whatever. AEW shows. All it is just a ticket. It's usually a decent seat, which I know it's always, you know, media is always accused, and AEW media, positive media, you could say, is always accused, oh, you just want a ticket to the show. And I guarantee there's probably cases like that. For the most part, I think people want to go and kind of do stuff, whatever. But we don't get access to Tony Khan before or after the show. There's no media availability with wrestlers after the show. At the pay-per-views, you know, thankfully they are doing press conferences, but it's again with Tony Khan, which is better than nothing.
And I want to make that clear: they are press conferences; they're not media scrums. Right. There is a difference between a scrum and a press conference. Those are press conferences. What they are doing,
right? Yeah, the scrum is more kind of afterward. It, to me, has always been like talking to somebody 101 afterwards, reporters are kind of all around. It's not.
Yeah, you got presented. A reporter all around someone, and then all, yeah. And which by the way is how AEW did it for the first couple of events.
Yes,
I remember. And then it became a press conference format. Yep.
The things that for like MMA fans, I remember Dana White used to do these all the time after press conferences, after shows, and that's where you would always get the good stuff because he would just fire and question, answer question after question, question whatever. So, but we don't get any access to talent at all. And it's not like there's regular media calls. There's ones before pay-per-views. But, you know, some of these things could get ironed out or answer questions or questions could be answered if you're actually able to talk to talent more often. Now, granted, there are, you know, the relationship we talked before. You try to reach out, things that see if things are true and so on. But again, you know, it's the access level. It's kind of asking some of those things. I think that also adds to the issue in that, you know, there's all these stories and rumors and so on. And usually with sports events and things like that, granted there are unions involved, is that you have access to athletes on the regular, even if it is in kind of a different environment. In pro wrestling, you really don't have that.
Yeah, it's not super accessible in that regard. WWE for major events when they have media does usually utilize a press box facility. Mm-hmm. Which is super helpful for getting work done. I wish AEW would do that, at least for the pay-per-views, even when they have a lot of media, because all their arenas have press box accessibility. So it would certainly be more helpful. But I also recognize that outside of maybe conducting interviews, there likely isn't a lot of work for media to do at a Dynamite or at something like that. So it begs the question, and I'm not upset that AEW does give press access. I think that's great in that regard, but it does beg the question, what are we looking to acquire out of having press access? You know, what can we do to make the media job a little easier? I think all of these things need to be asked because there are mutually beneficial instances there where a media member could do a great interview or write a great feature, while that in turn gives publicity to AEW or WWE or whoever it may be. And I do think that there are sometimes these notions of, well, we got to make sure that nobody asks anything too critical or whatever it may be. I think we got to check that at the door. Most wrestling media that has credibility are fair. I really do believe that, mm-hmm. especially from interacting with a lot. I think just about everybody who has credibility in wrestling media is fair in how they go about asking questions. Now, there are some who will just ask softballs, and that's just how it's going to be. That's how it is in sports media, too. But I very rarely see someone with credibility that just goes after talent or executives without any merit. So I do think that readdressing and reassessing that relationship would serve both sides of the equation in a beneficial way.
Yeah. I think it's always, I look at those opportunities like, you know, if AEW comes to Boston twice a year, that's two times that I, for example, or other media that are around me would get a chance just to, you know, it doesn't have to be every single person on the roster. It doesn't have to be Tony Khan. It could just be just a few wrestlers
do some interviews.
Like you mentioned, features. That's used to be that's kind of the way these things work, because you talk to people about the shows and all this stuff, things going on, and then also get a feature out of it and so on. I think those are, especially the local talent, there's just, to me, I think that just even like an hour, half an hour after show, that would be, to me, it'd be cool. But you know, that's one of those things. The other thing finally is, we kind of, you know, start to turn the bend on this. Wrestlers are quiet except to each other. And you know this, you've worked in the indies plenty of years and talked to plenty of people. You know, they want a lot of the attention for all the stuff that they want to get attention for. But when it comes to, you know, some of the other questions about contracts and, you know, so much stuff that is, it's kind of behind the scenes. And I honestly wish that wrestling was more like pro sports in terms of transactions. Like what's it going to hurt to know if, wrestler X is signed to a three-year deal or a five-year deal?
Sure.
I can understand if the money thing is, it's a little bit different because there's no union. I get that. But what is it going to hurt to know that? To me, it just adds to kind of the, you know, the free agency kind of type of thing and kind of the business end of just knowing, oh, hey, these guys are coming up. It's like any other sport. You kind of follow along with it. Or if you know, oh, you know, WWE re-signed Randy Orton to a five-year deal. Cool. Okay. Then we didn't know for sure. And it's not like, do you know if they signed a three-year deal or five-year deal? When's it up? All this, you know, those are things that I think are helpful. You know, and this kind of goes into the whole, you know, the Malachi Black situation. He takes to Instagram, and I know there might be some other issues going on there, what have you. I'm sure he's tired of talking about this stuff. But I mean, like he said in this Instagram video that, you know, he's like, I've never signed a 5-year deal or even close to it. That's all bullshit and lies. In the interview I just played from Busted Open, prior to that, actually, like there's all kinds of interesting things in that thing. Tony said it straight up in July 27th. He said it. He's like, this is when he was talking about this around the tampering stuff. Adam Cole is signed through 2027 or whatever he said at that time. Malachi Black has signed for, you know, has almost 5 more years left. That's where we got it from. So now I'm at this point of like, you have one guy over here saying this is not the case. You have the owner of the company saying he signed for 5 more years. Well, which one is it? And the easiest way to prove that is if you have a transaction thing is saying he signed for 5 years. Like I to me, that clears like some of this stuff with like releases, requesting releases, or if someone's like, I didn't request a release, just come out and say you didn't request a release. If you don't say it, then that's going to cause this rumor mill to start. Yep. And that's where the issues start. This is like kind of like the whole thing of like, you know, wrestlers don't like some of this scuttlebutt and talk. They're the ones that could ultimately be arbiters to say, I did not say this, or if you did, then and you don't want to admit you asked for your release. Okay, I get that. But somebody leaked it. So there's something like, it's not always the media's fault. It's a question of you can easily cut this off at the end by simply just coming out and saying it. And that's kind of this weird disconnect that, again, I don't know how you solve, but it's a frustration because it's an easy thing to fix to me. Just say what the situation is, or just say I did or I didn't. That's it.
Well, and I don't want to speculate on anybody's personal experiences or what their mental health is like or where they're at in life. It's clear that Malachi Black is going through some stuff right now. Yeah. And I think it's important to be respectful of that. And I know in the past that when I was going through some stuff, like I would be defensive of things, whether I knew deep down that wasn't really how things were or whatever it may be. And I think when our emotions run high, that kind of stuff happens. But then you have instances like with the CM Punk stuff where he pretty much accused the EVPs of talking to the media and trying to plant narratives into the media, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got the people who reported those stories being like, I've never spoken to those guys. So it is fascinating where people think information comes from. And I think individuals would be surprised how many people are willing to put information out there for the greater good. And because they know what's right versus what's not right and what's wrong and et cetera. So that's kind of what the beacon of journalism is, right? Like it's the beacon of truth. And that's what I think a lot of people who act as sources of information place upon themselves. So I know that's like a long-winded way of answering this question, but I think ultimately it boils down to an individual having media literacy, understanding where information may be coming from, and on their own merit, having conversations that help prevent quote unquote leaks or stuff like that from happening in the future.
Right. Yeah. With the Black situation, of course, the Buddy Matthews situation, this has been kind of going on for more than a week. And I look at it like, you know, both did these public kind of at indie shows kind of saying they were taking time off and so on. In the case of, you know, Black, he put out a statement and it said that he asked for his release. And then he later in the thing put release in quote marks. And that was what he was kind of focusing in that video. So, again, I kind of look at it like, well, the first thing you said, you asked for your release. There was no quotes around it. So you did ask for it. So that to me, that's kind of like the big thing of I have questions about that. If he doesn't want to answer those, cool. But then to say, you basically say, I never said this, or I said it in quote marks. Well, okay. There's something that you understand that might not make sense. And again, the 5 years thing and all this stuff, there's just so many questions about all this stuff. And it just, the longer that they don't go answer, it's kind of like with a, you know, the Celtics thing with Ime Udoka. And granted, there's some issues going on there, but the way that they handled this situation is bizarre at best, and it's put, unfortunately, a lot of female employees of the team in the bullseye from social media. I mean, you think wrestling Twitter is bad? Look what they had to take their staff page down because so many people were speculating. Well, it's terrible.
Can I step in real quick here?
Yes,
and I
please.
Think this is what it boils down to. And I've been calling for this for a while, and people have taken my words out of context on this, but I think transparency from wrestling promotions would go such a long way.
Hugely.
Because it would prevent situations like that. It would totally prevent situations like that, where if you open that degree of transparency, and you don't have to get into personnel issues, there are some things that deserve to stay private, but if you do, as you said, have a transaction wire or announce some terms of signings or anything of that nature, you protect yourself, number one. And two, you put things out in the public forum that can't be disputed. So I'm with you entirely on that. And I'm glad that with this whole like EVP Punk situation, they publicly said that there's going to be an investigation. So... or they've at least alluded heavily publicly that there's an investigation.
Right. They haven't outright said it. Yeah, it's weird.
But they've alluded heavily and they haven't denied it. So that to me is just as pretty much saying the same thing. So I think that stuff very much goes a long way in helping the public form rational intake on whatever the situation may be versus jumping to reckless speculation.
Yeah. All right. So as we wrap this up, yeah, I think transparency, I think we think it's good. I think in our industry, a case of always looking to improve and look for the truth and to try to get that as best you can, carry ourselves in a way that is both online and in person. I think that is respectful. I think it kind of goes a long way. You know, this is not a case where someone wants to be in this business for a year. I think you're thinking, you know, how do you want to be seen 5-10 years from now? I think that's important. I think about that stuff too. You know, but also fans being more discerning, and before they click a retweet, before they click a like, before they comment on something, look at the source and see, do you think it's really a reputable source? And are you saying and agreeing with something or disliking something because it scratches the itch of your feelings, or is it actually real? Is it come from something real, or is it something you want to believe? There are thousands of trolls out there. They're just terrible people, have nothing else to do, but they start shit all the time. And that just plays in this whole thing too. I would just be more discerning, look for the truth, and hopefully, you know, with wrestling groups, there's more transparency. And
yeah,
I don't know, hopefully someday we'll get there.
Wrestling reporters also have to make sure that they are doing their due diligence in reaching out for comment. Reach out to parties who are involved in a story that you're reporting. Reach out to PR officials. They might not get back to you, but do your due diligence in reaching out and making sure that you have done everything you can to cover yourself, because that also gives you credibility in turn.
Yep, I would agree. So, John, as we wrap up here, you put out a tweet the other day. You are you're looking for some work. You're a free agent now. Tell people kind of what's going on and what you are still doing and make the pitch, so to speak.
In the coming months, I'm going to be a free agent, and I'm still going to be doing work with ad-free shows and the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy podcast. But I have an opportunity now to take on other media responsibilities in sports, news, lifestyle, wrestling, whatever it may be, and content creation, team leadership, whatever it may be. I do believe that I'm doing the best work of my career right now. I feel like I have a more versatile profile than most broadcasters have in terms of the depth of the things that I've covered. And I've got 10 plus years of media experience, and anyone who's looking to do some business, my DMs are open at John Alba, JONALBA. And I'm more than happy to listen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, having known you, I'm a little bit biased, but yeah, I think you're really good at what you do. And I think
I appreciate that, buddy.
I think you're good in not only, you know, typical style broadcasting, you know, outside the wrestling realm, but also I think really a good fixture for what we do here. I think you bring an air of professionalism to it, and I think that's well needed as well. So yeah, I think it's not going to be too long before your dance card is full, And yeah, I think it'd be around for quite some time.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
And also, you're a great mental health advocate. I know for those people that I know may have just seen you've talked about some of the stuff on Twitter. You did a really good. I called a promo, but you know, it was in a wrestling ring. Was at the August Limitless Wrestling Show. It's available on their YouTube, where you really just kind of opened up to the fans. Limitless was like a big part of your life and your career for so long. It really kind of put you where you are today in a lot of ways. You mentioned that, but you were open about your mental health situation, and Randy, the owner, and everyone there didn't want to shy away from it. They wanted to be respectful of it and let you kind of have your moment to talk. And even though you got knocked down by Mac Daniels afterwards, the dastardly Mac Daniels, it was a real genuine moment, and you turned from a face or a heel to a face, a standing ovation. And
never thought I'd have that one day.
I know. But you know, I applaud you for being open with this stuff. And I think more and more people are doing that now. And it's good. And I think speeches like yours and being open, I think that encourages more people, even if they aren't the public eye. You know, I think it encourages them to do the same. They're not alone.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I do think that there is still, despite what some suggest, there's still a pretty significant stigma around mental health. And I just hope that some people understand it's okay to talk about these things. It's okay to not be okay. And I always encourage people to seek help. You're never above or below seeking help. I've done it. Many have done it. Matt Hardy and I did an amazing mental health and addiction episode of our podcast. That might be my favorite thing I've ever done in my career. Mm. And I highly encourage people to check it out, because if a guy that has made as many millions as Matt Hardy has can struggle with mental health, well, then all of us can. Mm-hmm. So put yourself first, put in the work for yourself, and never be afraid to seek help and seek assistance, because you're always worth it. So I know that mental health issues run rampant in pro wrestling. I'm glad that machismo aura that carried around for so long has kind of rolled back a little bit, and people are more open in talking about their feelings, but we still have a lot of work to do. So I'm all in on that.
Sounds good. All right, John, appreciate the time. Glad you helped help us figure out the world of wrestling media and everything in between. And years from now, when you're the Wrestling Hall of Fame, your bust will go in there. You know, with all the other,
they'll never be able to get the hair right. So I don't know about that, but thank you, Josh. It was a pleasure. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Big thanks to John for stopping by, and thanks to all of you for listening. Yeah, I don't know if this is a problem that will ever get solved. There's record this about a day or so after Bobby Fish and this whole thing, they got pulled off a post on our message board from somebody that does not actually write pro wrestling for a website, and a website picked something up he said, that turned into a thing, and the cycle goes all over again, and you know, Bobby saying the same things other did about, you know, credibility and all this stuff. It's just an endless cycle of stuff, bullshit in a lot of ways. But it is, I don't know if we fixed anything. I hope, I hope we someday we'll get to this point. I say this, and you know, I was talking about other media industries. This comes on the heels of, this is something I was following. So I don't know if you guys are into the Aaron Judge home run chase, but on Sunday, Red Sox played the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, and there was a rain delay. And because of the rain delay, it was about 90 minutes, so it was not a short one. Around the 90-minute mark is when they finally decided to call it. There was a story that, and obviously ESPN, this whole past weekend was such a big thing in terms of getting more people to try to watch these games and, you know, Apple TV and that whole thing. So there was a story that came out, I believe it was on Monday, from NJ.com, which is the Newark, New Jersey newspaper. It came with the actual Newark Star Ledger, a very famous paper. Their Yankees reporter, Brendan Cootey, I believe is how I pronounce his name, Kuty, reported that ESPN officials, quote unquote, leaned on MLB to extend a rain delay in this week's Sunday Night Baseball game with the idea of presenting another chance for Aaron Judge to hit his 61st home run. He would have been the next batter up if play had resumed. Buster Olney, who works for ESPN, is a Yankees insider. Covered the Yankees beat for another paper way back in the day, if I remember right. He's very plugged in the Yankees. Wrote a book about them, if I'm remembering that right. He responded, or that day, the 26th, whenever this was. So later that day, replied back to the tweet, LOL. And then other fans just kind of asked, say, hey, it's not a great look for ESPN. Buster said, it's simply not true. And someone said, your word against his makes sense. You'd be the one lying. I mean, this is like terminology and like phrasing that, I mean, this is like wrestling media people against all the time. And Buster said, nope, it's my word against those of his source who might be looking to blame someone for the long, in parentheses, and fruitless delay. So we really don't know what the deal is, but basically you have Buster only on behalf of, I assume, ESPN, saying that there was no pressure to do that. And you have NewJersey.com's reporter for the Yankees saying that there is. So obviously this is kind of handled at the executive level and not the team level. And the team, if I read this right, there was talk that Aaron Boone, who was the manager of the Yankees, basically kind of both teams were kind of getting frustrated with this delay because usually around 90 minutes is when you kind of say, okay, put up or shut up. Are we going to do this or not? And there was some talk, I guess, of him basically saying, okay, well, in this case, I'm just going to pull Judge from the game. So I'm going to take the decision off your hands. So, but there's kind of rumors and questions about that. Again, there's two sides and nobody has come out to this point that I know of has come out to actually say, this is definitively what happened. So this shit happens all over the place. So it's not just wrestling, but we'll do what we can to try to fix wrestling media, although I am not very optimistic. So big guest in the coming weeks ahead, I would tell you names, but then I am superstitious that they're going to fall through. But right now I have one scheduled for Monday afternoon and another one perhaps on tap for next week. Both will be first-time guests in this show, and I'm interested in talking to both for completely different reasons, but I think you'll enjoy both of them. So hopefully those come to fruition next week, and perhaps some other ones down the road if a certain organization would return my emails. That'll be a story for another day. Hopefully not a big story. That's it. So again, thanks to John. Thanks to all you for listening. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day. I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.